I Believe by Tuesday Lapsang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 5. Algernon ruffled his hair between his clenched fingers. He felt decidedly unhappy. Yes, well, he had committed suicide. Fine, he did it. Now he was paying for it, and he was going to pay for it some more. He sat there wondering where it was going to end, how it was going to end. He reviewed in his mind all the incidents which had occurred since he arrived on this, the plane of purgatory. So it's wrong to be an aristocrat, eh? It's wrong to be of blue blood, eh? He muttered aloud to himself, glowering down at the floor. Then he spun around at the opening of the door, at the vision which entered, a most attractive nurse. He rose to his feet, his face beaming like the morning sun. Ah, he exulted, an angel come to take me away from this benighted place. He eyed the nurse with unconcealed eagerness, saying, what pulchritude in a place like this! What? Stop it, said the nurse. I'm quite immune to your blandishments. You men are all the same. You think of one thing only when you come to this plane, and I can tell you, we women are thoroughly tired of all the come-ons which you try. Sit down, she said. I have to talk to you and take you to a different place. But first of all, I could not help hearing what you were mumbling about when I came in. After you, miss, said Algernon with much gallantry. The nurse sat, and Algernon hastened to take his seat beside her. He was most piqued when she quickly moved her seat away so that she was facing him. Now, 53, she said. Algernon held up his hand. You are mistaken, miss. I am not 53. I am Algernon St. Clair de Bonkers, he said. The nurse sniffed audibly and tossed her head. Don't be stupid, she replied. You're not in a play now. You're here on this plane, between acts, as one might phrase it. She held up her hand to stop him from speaking, and then said, there are two things in particular that I want to talk to you about first. One is that here you are not Algernon, whatever it is, but you are number 53. You are near enough a convict here. You've been convicted of the crime of suicide, and here you are referred to by the last two figures of your basic frequency, in your case, 53. Poor Algernon felt his mind boggle. Basic frequency, he said. I'm afraid you're talking completely above my comprehension. I have not the slightest idea what you're talking about. My name is Algernon, not 53. Oh, you have a lot to learn, young man, the nurse retorted with some asperity. You seem to be remarkably ignorant for a person who professes to be of near royal blood, but let us deal with that first. You seem to think that because of a particular act upon earth made it necessary for you to be as a titled person, that you carry it on over here. You do not. Oh, Algernon burst out. You must be a communist or something. You're adopting a communist theme if you think that no one is entitled to their status, that all men are equal. The nurse sighed with resigned exasperation, and then tiredly said, "You are indeed ignorant. I'm going to tell you here and now that communism is a crime, at least the equal of suicide, because, whereas a person who commits suicide commits a crime against himself, yet communism is a crime against the whole race, a crime against humanity. Communism, in fact, is as a cancer in the body of the world. We are not in favor of communism, and in time, after much time, communism will eventually be stamped out because it is founded on false precepts. But that's not what we are discussing." She referred to some papers in her hands, raised her head, and looked straight at Algernon, saying, "We have to get you away from this dreadful idea that you have that because you are a titled person once, you're always going to be a titled person. Let us consider things in the terms of the earth. Think of a writer who was down on that world some time ago. His name was Shakespeare. He wrote plays, which are very familiar to you, and people act the parts which he wrote. Sometimes there'll be a villain in the play, sometimes there'll be a king portrayed, but I'm going to put it to you, quite bluntly, that people would laugh to scorn any actor who, having played the king in Hamlet, went about for the rest of his life imagining that he was still a king in reality. People go down to the earth to take that particular part in the play of life, which will enable them to learn the tasks which they have to learn. And having learned their tasks and returned to the astral world, then, of course, they discard the imaginary identity and revert to their own natural identity, which is determined by their own superior over-self." Algernon, or rather 53 from now on, shuddered and replied, oh dear, I really do dislike blue stockings. When one has a beautiful young girl who starts preaching and teaching, then really my emotions become quite turned off." "Oh, how delightful," said the nurse, "for I found your thoughts to be highly unpleasant, and I am glad indeed that I have dampened your very obvious lust." She again referred to her notes, checking one paper against another, and then she said, "You have been sent to the wrong home of rest. I have to take you to another one, which is of more temporary nature, because you are having to go back to the earth at the earliest possible moment. You are, in fact, just a transient here, and there is little that we can do for you, except pass you on as quickly as we may. Please follow me." With that, she rose to her feet and led the way to the door. 53, ex-Algernon, darted ahead of her and held the door open with a slightly mocking bow. "After you, madam, after you," he said. The nurse swept in high dignity through the door and bumped into the doctor, who was just about to enter. "Oops, I'm so sorry, doctor, I didn't see you," exclaimed the nurse. "Oh, think nothing of it, nurse, think nothing of it. I was coming to collect number 53, because the board wants to see him again. Do you have anything to say to him first?" The nurse smiled at the doctor and replied, "No, I shall be glad to get rid of him. He seems to be rather fresh for a man in his position. I've been trying to teach him that blue blood does not count here, but at least it is a bit higher than one with communist blood. But, doctor, the nurse said quickly, after the board has finished with him, he has to go to the home for transients. There was a mix-up in the orders, and I believe that that is why you brought him here. Will you see that he goes to the home for transients? The doctor nodded and said, "Yes, nurse, I'll attend to it." And then he nodded to 53 and said, "Come along, we're late already." With that, he turned and led the way down another corridor, which 53, had not seen before. He, poor fellow, looked decidedly downcast and muttered, "Purgatory. This is purgatory, all right, I'm sure. I shall be several inches shorter by the time I get out of here. I've walked myself down to my knee joints almost." The doctor, who had caught his mutter, laughed delightedly and retorted, "Yes, indeed, you will be very, very much shorter when you leave here, because you will be an infant inside its mother." The doctor and 53 turned into a long corridor. Two guards sat, one on each side of the entrance. One nodded briefly to the doctor and said, "Is this 53? "Yes, it is," said the doctor. "Are you the one who's going to accompany us?" The guard on the right-hand side rose to his feet and replied, "I'm the one who's going to go with you, so let's not waste any more time, shall we?" Turning, he strode down the corridor at quite a smart pace. 53 and the doctor had to step out briskly in order to keep up with him. They walked for quite a long way. 53 was horrified to see that no matter how far they walked, the corridor seemed to stretch on endlessly. Endlessly. But there came a diversion. There was a branching of the corridor. The guard, or guide, 53 wasn't sure which he was, took the left turn and went on a little further and then knocked smartly at a door and stood back. "Come in," said a voice, and the guard quickly threw open the door so that first the doctor and then 53 and lastly the guard entered, the latter shutting the door firmly behind him. "Come and sit here, please," said a voice. 53 moved forward and took the seat indicated. "Now, we have to discuss your future. We want you to get back on Earth at the very earliest possible moment, compatible with a woman's biological functions," said the voice. 53 looked about him. He had been rather dazzled by the amount of light in the building. It seemed to be a very light building indeed, and there were many flashing lights all over the place. One wall, he saw with some astonishment, appeared to be of frosted glass, over which, at intervals, flickering colored lights passed quickly and vanished. He saw that he was in a room the like of which he had never seen before. It appeared to be of clinical austerity, not white, but a very restful shade of green. About him there were five or six, he could not count them precisely, people dressed in greenish overalls. He was quite uncertain of the exact number of people about, because it seemed, at intervals, some people came into the room and others disappeared from the room. But this was no time to be paying attention to trivia, because the first man was speaking again. I have very carefully examined and considered all the information which has been put before me. I have gone very thoroughly into your past before you went down to earth. And I find that although, according to your lights, you did fairly well on the earth, yet, according to your past history of real life, you were a failure, and you compounded your failure by committing the crime of suicide. So now we want to help you. 53 looked dreadfully sour and could not help bursting out. Help me? Help me? Since I've been here, I've been criticized, I've been reprimanded for almost everything. I've been reprimanded for being one of the upper class, and I've been reprimanded for saying that perhaps I should have been a communist. What am I to believe? If I am here for punishment, then why not get on with it? The elderly, slender man with the gray hair sitting in front of 53 looked really distressed and remarkably compassionate. I'm so sorry indeed that you feel like this, he said. It is your attitude which is making everything so difficult for us, because we've come to the inescapable conclusion that as you went to the earth as a player in a rather exalted status, that has affected your psyche, and so that makes it necessary that, when you are sent back, you will have to be sent back to rather poor conditions. Otherwise, you're going to be quite intolerable, and you're going to give your over-self absolutely false impressions. Do I make myself clear? He asked. 53 glowered and retorted, No, definitely not. I just don't know what you're talking about when you talk about the over-self and all that. So far, all I have been told is just a mass of gibberish, and I have no sense of guilt for what I've done. Therefore, according to English law, I have done no wrong. The elderly man felt his determination harden. It seemed to him that this man, this number 53, was just being difficult for the sake of being difficult. You are completely wrong in your reference to English law, the interrogator said, because if you knew anything at all about English law, you would know that one statement is to the effect that ignorance of the law is no excuse. So that, if you break the law of England, and then you claim you did not know there was such a law, then you are still found guilty, because you should have acquainted yourself with the existence of such a law. And please do not try to be truculent with me, because I am one of those who hold your destiny in my hands. And if you antagonize us too much, then we can make your conditions hard indeed. Just pay attention and keep your truculence in check. 53 shuddered at the tone of the voice and recognized when he was defeated. He said, Sir, but what am I to do when terms are used which have no meaning for me? What, for instance, is the over-self? Later, said the interrogator, you will be taught all about this. It will suffice for the moment if I say that your over-self is what you would refer to as your eternal immortal soul. And you now are just a puppet or extension of that over-self, almost, as one might say, like a pseudopod, an extension from your over-self, materialized into material substance, so that you may learn by actual hard physical experience that which is unobtainable to the far more tenuous over-self. Poor 53 felt his head reeling. He did not really understand any of this, but he thought that as he had been told he would be instructed later, he'd better cut things short, and now he should just listen. So he nodded dumbly in answer to the interrogator's raised eyebrows. The interrogator, or perhaps a better word to use would be counselor, looked down at his papers and then said, "You have to return as a child of poor parents, those who are without social status, because the act which you have been called upon to play in your previous life seems seriously to have warped your understanding and your perceptions, and you place yourself into a class to which you are not entitled. We're going to suggest, and you have the right to refuse, that you are born to parents in London, in the area known as Tower Hamlets. There are some very suitable parents to be near Wapping High Street. You will have the advantage of being born quite close to the Tower of London, and to the Mint, and to the very famous dock areas, where there is shocking poverty and suffering. Here, if you agree, and if you have the moral and mental fiber, you can work your way up to be a physician or a surgeon, and in saving the lives of those around you, you can atone for the lives that you have taken and caused to be taken. But you will have to decide quickly, because these women who we have chosen as prospective mothers for you are already pregnant, and that means we have no time to waste. I'm going to show you," he said, "the area which will be your locale." He turned and waved his hand to the wall, which 53 had taken to be of glass, of frosted glass. As he did so, it sprang into life, life in color, and 53 could see an area of London which he knew only indifferently. The River Thames, yes, Southwark Bridge, London Bridge, and then the Bastille of Tower Bridge, moved on to the screen, and to the side of the tower, London itself could be seen. He sat there quite enthralled, looking at the absolutely clear pictures, seeing traffic on the streets. He was most intrigued to see horseless carriages and very, very few horse-drawn vehicles indeed. He exclaimed on the matter, and the counselor said, "Oh, yes, horse-drawn traffic has almost disappeared. Things have changed considerably since you've been here, and you have been here quite a time, you know. You were unconscious for about 3 years. Now everything is motorized. Motor buses, motor vans, and motor cars. Things are supposed to have improved, but I personally deplore the passing of the horse from the streets." 53 turned his attention to the picture again. Mint Street, Cable Street, Shadwell, East Smithfield, the Highway, Thomas More Street, St. Catherine's, Wapping High Street, and Wapping Wall. The counselor said, "Well, we have 5 women who are pregnant. I want you to choose which area you prefer of that shown. Of the 5 women, one is the wife of an innkeeper, or I believe you might call him a publican. The second is the wife of a greengrocer. The third is the wife of an ironmonger. The fourth is the wife of a motor bus driver. And the fifth, she is again a lodging house keeper. I say again because the first one is an innkeeper. Now, you have a right of choice, and no one will influence you. I can give you a list of them, and you have 24 hours upon which to meditate over this matter. And if you need any advice, you merely have to ask." 53 sat back and gazed at the living pictures on that wall, seeing people move about, seeing the strange costumes that women were now wearing, marveling at the horseless carriages going along, marveling too at the amount of building going on. Then he turned to the counselor and said, "Sir, I would ask you particularly that I be permitted to see the 10 people, 5 fathers and 5 mothers, from whom I'm expected to pick my parents. I would like to see them. I would like to see their home conditions." The counselor, or interrogator, shook his head slowly, with real regret. "Ah, my friend," he mourned, "that is a request beyond my ability to grant, for we never, never do such a thing. We can merely give you the details, and you make your choice. You're not permitted to see your parents, for that would be an invasion of their privacy. Now, I suggest you return to your transient hotel and think about the whole matter." So saying, he bowed slightly to the doctor and to 53, picked up his papers and left the room. The doctor said, "Come on, let us go," and rose to his feet. 53 rose reluctantly and followed him from the room. Together they retraced their steps, accompanied by the guard. Together they went along that corridor which seemed so endless, and which now seemed even longer. At last they came out into the open again, and 53 took a deep breath, inhaling energy and life as he did so. The guard left them to return to his post, and the doctor and 53 continued on to a fairly dull gray building, which 53 had vaguely noticed before, but passed off as of no interest. They entered the front door, and a man at the desk said, "Third on the left," and took no more interest in them. They went on to the third on the left and entered a bare room. There was a bed and a chair, a small table on which 53 was interested to observe a large folder with the number 53 stamped on it. "Well, there it is," said the doctor. "You have 24 hours from now to ponder upon your decision, and after that time I shall come for you, and we will have to go and see what can be seen and prepare you for going back to the earth. Goodbye." The doctor turned and made his way out of the room, shutting the door behind him, shutting the door on 53, who stood disconsolately in the middle of the room, apprehensively fingering the pages enclosed within the folder marked 53. 53 glowered at the closing door and put his hands behind his back. With head sunk upon his chest, he paced the room and paced and paced. Hour after hour, he walked about the room and then, quite tired with the exertion, he flung himself into a chair and gazed dourly through the window. 53, eh? He muttered to himself. Like a convict, and all for doing something which I thought was good. What was the point of living a life as neither man nor woman? He put his chin in his hands and crossed his legs and looked a typical picture of misery. Then he thought, or did I think I was doing the right thing? They may have something in what they say, after all. I think it's very likely that I was giving way to self-pity, but here I am now, given a number, like a convict at Dartmoor, and saddled with the decision of saying what I'm going to do next. I don't know what I'm going to be. I don't know that it matters at all anyway. I shall probably end up again in this place. He jumped to his feet again and went to the window and thought he would take a walk around the garden. Carefully he pushed, and the window swung open easily to his touch. He went to step outside, and it was like stepping into a thin, invisible sheet of rubber. It stretched enough to prevent him from getting a bruise, and then, to his astonishment, it just contracted, and he was propelled gently and effortlessly back into the room. "Convict after all, eh?" he said to himself. And then he sat down in the chair again. For hour after hour, he sat there thinking, wondering, in a state of complete indecision. "I thought that after death I would go to heaven," he said to himself, and immediately followed by it, "Well, no, I suppose I didn't think that at all. I didn't know what to think. I've seen so many people die, and there's been no sign of a soul leaving the body. So I came to the conclusion that all this that the parsons yammer about, life after death, etc., was hogwash." He jumped to his feet again and started the endless marching up and down the room, thinking all the time and unconsciously talking to himself. "I remember in the mess one evening we were discussing it, and Captain Broadbreeches expressed the very determined view that when you were dead, and that's all there was to it. He said of the men, women, children, and the horses he'd seen killed, but never, he told us, had he seen a soul rise out of a dead body and get winging heavenwards. In his mind's eye he saw again life as it was in England while he was a schoolboy, and then, when first he was a cadet, he saw himself as a newly commissioned officer, proudly getting on a ship to go and fight the Dutch. He used to think of the Boers as the Dutch because that was their original ethnic group, Dutch. But as he looked back, he could see that the Boers were merely a group of farmers fighting for what they believed to be the right to choose their own way of life, unfettered by domination from England. The door opened, and a man came in. "I do suggest, Number 53, that you try to get some rest. You're merely wearing yourself out with this endless pacing around. In a few hours, you'll have to undergo quite a traumatic experience. The more rest you get now, the easier it will be for you later on. 53 turned sullenly towards him, and in his best military manner said, "Get out." The man shrugged his shoulders, turned and left the room, and 53 went on with his brooding and his pacing. "What was this about the kingdom of heaven?" he said to himself. "The Parsons always had this talk about other mansions, other planes of existence, other forms of life. I remember our padre saying that until Christianity came to the earth, everyone was condemned to damnation, to eternal suffering, eternal torments, and that only the Roman Catholics would go to heaven. Now I wonder how long the world has been in existence, and why should all these people before Christianity be condemned when they didn't know that they had to be saved?" March, march, march. He went across the room, back again, across again, back again, endlessly. If he'd been on a treadmill, he thought, he would have covered quite a number of miles going up steps. At least that would have been harder work than walking backwards and forwards across the room. At last, angry and frustrated, he flung himself on the bed and lay there sprawling. This time, no darkness descended. He just lay there, full of hatred, full of bitter resentment, and the hot, salty tears came spurting from his eyes. Furiously, he tried to brush them away with the back of his hands, and then at last he turned on his face and had a spasm of sobbing into a pillow. After what seemed to be several eternities, there came a knock on the door, which he ignored. The knock came again, and again he ignored it. After a decent interval, the door was slowly opened, and there was the doctor. He glanced in for a moment, and then he said, "Ah, are you ready? 24 hours has now elapsed." 53 put a leg over the side of the bed, then lethargically put the other one over. Slowly he sat up. "Have you decided to which family you're going?" asked the doctor. "No, damn it, no, I haven't given it a thought." "Ah," said the doctor, "so you're fighting every inch of the way, eh? Well, it doesn't matter to any of us, you know. Although, you will find it hard to believe, we are indeed trying to help you. And if you, by your procrastination, miss this opportunity, you'll find that opportunities are fewer and fewer, and the families get less and less." The doctor went to the table and picked up the folder marked 53, and idly he flipped through it. "You have a choice of 5 families here," he said, "and some get no choice at all. Some are just directed. Let me tell you something." He eased himself into the chair, leaned back, and crossed his legs, gazing sternly at 53, and then he said, "You're like a spoiled child giving way to immature rage. You committed a crime. You messed up your life. Now you have to pay for it. And we're trying to arrange that you pay for it on the most comfortable terms. But if you will not cooperate with us, and if you just insist on behaving like a spoiled baby, then eventually you'll come to the point when you have no choice where you can go. You may find yourself as the child of some underprivileged black family in Mombasa, or possibly sent as a girl child to a family in Calcutta. You know, girls in Calcutta are not worth much. People want boys. They can help. And as a girl child, you might find yourself sold into prostitution or into conditions where you are a virtual slave. Poor 53 sat bolt upright on the edge of the bed, his hands very tightly grasping the edge of the mattress, his mouth wide open, and his eyes wild and staring. He looked much like a wild animal that had just been captured and put in a cage for the first time. The doctor looked at him, but there was no sign of recognition, no sign that 53 had heard the remarks. If you persist in your stupid, recalcitrant attitude and make it so much more difficult for us, then, as a last resort, we may send you to an island where only lepers live. You have to live out the other 30 years which you skipped before. There's no two ways about it. There is no way of overcoming it. It's the law of nature, so you'd better come to your senses. 53 sat there in an almost catatonic state. So the doctor got up, went to him, and slapped his face, first one side and then the other. 53 jumped to his feet in rage and then slumped. "Well, what can I do?" he said. "I'm being sent back to Earth as a member of one of a deplorably low form of life. I'm not used to being of such a low status." The doctor looked truly sad and then sat down on the bed beside 53, saying, "Look, my boy, you're making a grave mistake, you know. Supposing you were on Earth now, and you were a member of the theatrical community. Suppose that you'd been offered the part of King Lear, or Hamlet, or someone like that. Well, possibly you would jump at such an opportunity. But then, after the play was over, after the audience had gone, and after the producers had decided upon a new production, would you insist that you were King Lear, or Othello, or Hamlet? If you were offered the opportunity of being, for example, the Hunchback of Notre Dame, or Falstaff, or someone of lesser status, would you say that such was unworthy of a person who had been King Lear, or Hamlet, or Othello?" The doctor stopped speaking. 53 sat on the bed, idly scraping the floor, scuffling the carpet with a foot, and then he said, "But this is not play acting. I was living on Earth. I was a member of the upper class, and now you want me to be, what is it, the son of a publican, the son of a bus driver, or whatever?" The doctor sighed and then said, "You were upon Earth to live out a part. You picked, before you went to Earth, what you thought would be the best conditions for you to enable you to be a successful actor. Well, you failed. The act was a flop. So back you go to a different condition. You've got a choice. In fact, you have 5 choices. Some have no choice. He jumped to his feet, saying, Come on, we have dallied too long already, and the council will be coming impatient, so follow me. He moved to the door and then, on an impulse, turned back to the table and picked up the file marked 53. Tucking it under his left arm, he reached out his right hand and grasped 53 by the arm, shaking him roughly. Come, he said, be a man. You are thinking all the time of how important you were as an officer. Surely an officer and a gentleman doesn't behave like this cowardly, slobbering person that you've become. Sullenly, 53 got to his feet, and together they went to the door. Outside, a man was just coming down the corridor. Oh, he said, I was coming to see what had happened. I thought perhaps our friend was so overcome with sorrow that he couldn't get off his bed. Patience, friend, patience, admonished the doctor. We have to show tolerance in a case like this. Together, the 3 men walked along the corridor, back through that long tunnel again, past the watchful guards who this time just inspected them, and then they went on to the door. Come in, said the voice, and the 3 men entered the room. This time there was the elderly, gray-haired man sitting at the head of the table, and on either side of him there were 2 other people, one man and one woman, dressed in their long green coats. The 3 turned to look at 53 as he entered. The man at the head of the table raised his eyebrows and said, Well, have you decided which you should be? The doctor nudged 53, who was standing there in sullen silence. Speak up, he whispered. Can't you see they're losing patience with you? 53 stepped forward, and without being invited to do so, slammed himself down into a chair. No. How can I decide? I have only the briefest details of these people. I have no idea what conditions I will encounter. I know I find a publican as extremely distasteful, but possibly an ironmonger would be even more distasteful. I am quite ignorant of such people, never having encountered them on a social basis in my life. Perhaps you, sir, with your undoubted experience, would be prepared to advise me. 53 looked insolently at the man at the head of the table, but he just smiled tolerantly and he said, You are extremely class-conscious, and I agree with you that the honorable trade of innkeeper or public house manager or ironmonger would be too much for your subconscious. I could indeed, though, very strongly recommend that eminent public house in Cable Street, but for one of your type given in to too much snobbishness, I will, instead, suggest another family, that of the greengrocer. The father is Martin Bond, and the wife is Mary Bond. Mary Bond is almost a full term, and if you're going to take over the body of her as yet unborn child, you must lose absolutely no more time. You must come to your senses and decide, for only you can decide. Greengrocer? Thought 53. Rotten potatoes and stinking onions and overripe tomatoes. Ugh! However did I get in a mess like this? He twiddled his fingers, scratched his head, squirmed miserably in the chair. The others in the room kept quiet. They knew of the desperate state which one got into at having to make such a decision. At last, 53 raised his head and said defiantly, "Well, I will take that family. They might even find they've got a better man in their family than they ever had before." The woman sitting at the side of the table said, "Mr. Chairman, I think we should run a series of checks on him again, because we have to see that he is still compatible with the mother." It would be a terrible thing for the woman if, after all she's gone through, her baby was stillborn. The man at the other side of the table said, "Yes, if the child is stillborn, that still does not help you, because you would be returned here on the grounds of your lack of cooperation, and your intransigence will have caused the woman to lose her child. I do suggest, for your own sake, it really doesn't matter to us, that you cooperate more, that you try to make a more equable temperament, or you may find that we shall have to send you anywhere like garbage being thrown out." The woman rose to her feet, hesitated a moment, and then turned to 53 and said, "Come with me." The chairman nodded and also rose to his feet. The doctor touched 53's arm and said, "Come along, this is it." Reluctantly, like a man facing execution, 53 climbed sluggishly to his feet and followed the woman into a side room. Here, things were very different. The whole walls seemed to be flickering lights behind frosted glass. There seemed to be a remarkable number of knobs and buttons and switches. 53 thought for a moment that he had got himself into an electric power station, but then, directly in front of him, was a peculiarly shaped table, a very peculiarly shaped table indeed. It seemed to be the outline of a human figure, arms, legs, head, and everything. The woman said, "Get on that table." For a moment, 53 hesitated. Then, shrugging his shoulders, he climbed onto the table, brusquely brushing off the kindly hand of the doctor, who tried to assist him. As he lay on the table, he found a most peculiar sensation overtook him. The table seemed to mold itself to him. He had never felt more comfortable in his life. The table was warm. Looking up, he found his sight was not so good as it had been. It was blurry. Faintly, indistinctly, he could make out shapes on the wall in front of him. Vaguely and strangely uninterested, he gazed at the wall, and he thought he could distinguish a human form. It seemed to be a female form. At a rough guess, 53 thought she was in bed. Then, as he watched through lackluster eyes, he had an impression that someone was pulling back the bedclothes. A distorted voice came to him. "It seems to be all right. I say he is compatible." It was very strange indeed. 53 had an impression that he was going under an anesthetic. There was no struggling, no apprehension. There was not even clear thought. Instead, he lay there on that form-fitting table, lay there and gazed up uncomprehendingly at the people whom previously he had known so well. The doctor, the chairman, the woman. Vaguely, he was aware that they were saying things. Compatible basic frequency, temperature inversion, a period of synchronization and stabilization, and then he smiled drowsily, and the world of purgatory slipped away from him, and he knew no more of that world. There was a long, sounding silence, a silence which was not a silence, a silence when he could feel but not hear vibrations. And then, suddenly, it was as though he were thrust into a golden dawn. He saw before him a glory such as that which he could never remember having seen before. He seemed to be standing, bemused and half-conscious, in a glorious, glorious countryside. In the distance there were tall spires and towers, and about him there were many people. He had the impression that a very beautiful figure came and stood beside him, saying, "Be of good heart, my son, for you are going down to the world of sorrow again. Be of good heart, for we shall be with you, keeping contact. Remember, you are never alone, never forgotten. And if you do that which your inner conscience dictates, no harm will befall you, but only that which has been ordained, and at the successful conclusion of your time upon the world of sorrows, you will return to us here, triumphant. Rest. Be tranquil. Be at peace." The figure turned away, and 53 turned over in his bed or table or wherever he was, and slumbered, and was at peace, and he knew no more in his consciousness of that which had happened. End of chapter 5.